The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says more than 81 million people are affected by some form of disability in Africa, and an estimated 1 billion people worldwide live with a form of disability. Some of the most common disabilities in Africa are physical and mental disabilities. People living with disability encounter many challenges in their daily lives. Access to adequate health care and education are two of them. In 2006, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities was adopted. However, much remains to be done. Today we will discuss disability with our guests. Joining us in the studio is Hilda B. Mulu, an advocate for persons with disabilities in Cameroon and a 2014 Young African Leaders Mandela Washington Fellow. Hilda, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lenore. So delighted to be a part of your program.
It's great to have you, and you are also with a women's group in Cameroon. You'll tell us about it, a women's with disability group.
That's right.
You'll tell us more about it shortly. Also joining us via phone from Geneva, Switzerland, is Dr. Martha Imamura, medical officer on the disability and rehabilitation team in the World Health Organization Department of Violence and Injury. Dr. Imamura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Leonard. Good afternoon, Hilda. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the DAR team here at the WHO headquarters, I'm very honored to participate in this event and have the opportunity to talk more about disability.
And we are delighted to have you with us, Dr. Imamura. We will talk very shortly with Hilda and Dr. Imamura, but let me remind the listeners that if you would like to participate in the program with your questions or comments, you can call us at 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com. And before we start discussing disability and health, first, Dr. Isaac Agbola is Dean of Gallaudet University College of Liberal Art, a university for hearing impaired here in the United States. He elaborates on some challenges faced by the disabled, and he speaks in sign language, and this is the audio translation of what he has to say.
The greatest disability is not being deaf nor blind. The greatest disability is the attitude of society towards those that have disability. I would say that your future is in your hands. You need to create alliances with society, with government, to fight for your rights, but it starts always with you. You may never fully depend on others to do for you what you must do. In those countries where opportunity has advanced, it's advanced because deaf people fought for it, and they fought for it with their allies. But the leaders of that fight has to be the deaf community themselves.
That was the Dean of Gallaudet University College of Liberal Art here in the United States. He's originally from Nigeria, and that Dr. Isaac Agbola is a hearing impaired. Now, one of the things that Dr. Agbola said, he started by saying the greatest disability is the attitude of society toward mm-hmm. those who are disabled. And mm-hmm. I'm going to start with you, Hilda, because you are a person living with disability. You have a wheelchair to move around. Mm-hmm. How do people react to you?
I should say I have muscular dystrophy. I've had it from the age of 5. And so progressively I've lost mobility, first walking and then wobbling and then getting on the wheelchair. And in my country, there is still a lot of stigmatization of persons with disabilities. And like the dean said a while ago, it takes you being able to look beyond all that. You know, people will think what they think, but it depends on how you answer to what they think. And sometimes you are the person who will educate them you know, there are a lot of people who are still ignorant. They consider disability as a curse, or like you don't have to belong to this society. There are a lot of challenges, you know, from people, from the community itself, from the society. But as a person with a disability, be it hearing impairments, visual impairments, mobility impairments, or intellectual disabilities, you have to develop that mindset of being willing to overcome. And like he said, be able to develop the alliances that are needed to network with other people to get the help that is needed to get you where you want to. So I would say that it's difficult, it is challenging. But of course, we need to help people to understand that as persons with disabilities, we belong to the society, mm-hmm. and it will be of good to all of us to encourage persons with disabilities to be in the society and to contribute as well for the development of our societies.
Very, very significant what you just said, especially coming from the perspective of someone who is experiencing this challenge. A doctor, you heard earlier the dean, and you also heard what Hilda had to say. Now, in Hilda's case, she experienced muscular dystrophy at 5, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, I don't if I messed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, muscular dystrophy.
Dystrophy, yes, at 5. Dr. Mamora, at the age of 5, she started to go through the experience of losing her mobility progressively. Now, some people are born with disability, physical disability. In the case of Hilda, she experienced it in her life later at 5. Can you give us a sense of the type of, maybe not statistic, but the in terms of numbers, if we don't have the number, at least, when you look at the big picture, when it comes to people who are born with physical disability as opposed to people who come across, well, who encounter physical disability in their life, what is the number, or perhaps what is the statistic, if you have any to share?
In terms of muscular dystrophy, you mean?
Specifically, if possible.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have data on muscular dystrophy specifically. But we know that children who are born with physical disabilities, if taken care, let's say, since childhood, in terms of provision of assistive technology and also all the other issues that some comorbidities, they can achieve better, in terms of going to school, achievements in terms of being able to transport themselves using these assistive technologies. And in muscular dystrophy, we know that the disease progresses, yeah, over time. And Hilda gave us the good example that she experienced. But if society, and especially the healthcare system, is able to provide the opportunities she needs, then she will be able to produce exactly as other people without disability. That's the ultimate goal of our action plan.
Now, a lot of, according to WHO statistics, the majority of people who live with disability are in developing countries. Is there a specific reason? Do we know why?
Yeah, and you're so right. In this Global Disability Action Plan and also in the United Nations high-level meeting that was held last September 2013, there is an estimated 80% of all people with disability are in these countries and developing countries. Maybe one of the reasons is because of the inadequate policies and standards, also the negative attitudes and discrimination. Also lack of provision of services, service delivery, maybe inadequate fund, also lack of accessibility to services. But also even, you know, when you consider, not in muscular dystrophy, but in other health conditions where maybe malnutrition and other sources of environmental could also influence on that very high level.
Now, one of the challenges, and this question is for you, Hilda, one of the challenges of people who live with disability is access to health care.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what is happening in your country, Cameroon.
Maybe taking from my personal experience,
mm-hmm.
Just like everything else, when you live with a disability, you're kind of left behind. You know, we talk about accessibility issues to education, to health care, And, you know, the reality in Africa is that sometimes to get to a hospital, you know, you have to go through a lot of difficult routes and take long distances and all that. Mm-hmm. And imagine that you're a person with a disability without an assistive device who has to mm-hmm. get to that hospital. Yes. So you find a lot of people, a lot of persons with disabilities who are left behind who cannot get to the hospitals. Another thing is that a lot of people with disabilities are also amongst the poorest of the poor. Mm-hmm. So it's not only because of the roads or because of the distance to the hospitals, it's because they cannot afford health care. Yeah. And another thing is, you know, we still have a lot of cultural constraints when it comes to disabilities. Mm-hmm. There are people who consider disability as an ill omen. There are people who consider their children with disabilities as a terrible curse that has happened to the family. And depending on what community you belong to or what family you are in, they will not see a need for you to be taken to the hospital. Yeah. Or there are other places where they believe that, okay, it's only the witch doctor who can solve this. Mm-hmm. So there is still a lot of that going on. And I think you mentioned at the beginning healthcare and education. I believe that education is very important. I see now what is happening is that persons with disabilities who are getting educated are serving as role models, you know, to break
someone
of those
like
myths and to tell parents that you can indeed invest in your child with a disability. Some parents just give up because they never see someone with a disability in the public. Mm-hmm. So they don't know that if they educate their child with a disability or if they train them, they can become productive citizens of the country. Yeah. You know, so I'm glad that a few people are stepping up to be role models. But I think that the family, thankfully, we still have a very strong family support system in Africa. And I hope that our families can truly encourage children and people with disabilities to step out. It may be challenging, it may be difficult, but to step out and to live their lives fully.
Yes. Dr. Imamura, you are originally from Brazil, and, you know, I will say that because I would like to get your perspective with regards to your country. What is happening?
Yeah, and I specifically come from state of Sao Paulo, where for the past, let's say, 6 years, there was a very important drive from the government of this state to create a Secretary of State for the Rights of Persons with Disabilities at the same level that would be for the Secretary of Health, Education, Transportation. So, and also in Brazil, we have the quotas law, where every company over 100 employees would have to hire people with disabilities. And so there is an important drive to create service delivery of the highest quality, also deliver the assistive technologies or devices into the cities where the main hospitals are not there. And also in Ecuador, in Latin America, there is a beautiful experience of this government drive to really look in each house where there are people with disability, what were their needs, not data from high-income countries, but within their people, and to try to identify the needs so that all these needs could be met in this vice presidency model. Mm-hmm. And with this, there are statistics showing that higher number of people with disability go back even to work and to pay their taxes, which then shows to us in these two models that existing already in place that it is possible to make a shift or a change in the behavior, not only from the health professionals, but also from the managers, the policymakers, and more importantly, I think, to the member states, the ministries of health, the welfare that belongs to the WHO, and to the point that this past May 2014, there was this Global Disability Action Plan by the World Health Organization, 2014-2021, Better Health for All People with Disabilities, with clear objectives, success indicators, one being exactly what Hilda mentioned to us about removing barriers to finance and to make rehabilitation, assistive technology, community-delivered service, affordable to all people with disabilities. It is a challenge, but we have countries that are doing very good work in terms of changing the scenario.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Umamura said countries are doing a good work in terms of changing the scenario. What do you experience in Cameroon? Do you see any types of changes? When, for example, when there is a convention such as the one that was voted in 2006, the mm-hmm. Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, mm-hmm. did you see an immediate change in the way the country is approaching the situation of people with disability? How much of an impact is there when decisions are made at the UN or WHO, for example? Mm-hmm. How much of an impact do you see on the ground?
I think that's a very good question. And in Cameroon, especially in 2006, I must commend our government for making sure that people knew that there was this convention that was ratified by the Cameroon government. But the challenge is in changing people's mindsets. Mm, she mentions behavior change. Mm-hmm. So I think that more needs to be done to make sure that people change their mindsets. And say employers have to understand that the law says that you should employ, say, 10% of persons with disabilities. And I think the government should also go a step further. Mm-hmm. In making sure that it not only ratifies, but that this law is being implemented on the ground. One thing I'd also like to mention is that when we talk about disability, like in the case of Cameroon, what happens in the urban areas or the more urbanized areas is very different from what happens in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. And someone with a disability in a rural area can feel completely left out. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is important for the government to make sure that they incorporate everyone with a disability, be it in the urban areas or in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have this question from one of our listeners. He sent the question on Facebook, and that's Issa in Sierra Leone. He says, how does the World Health Organization ensures that countries follow the rules that are being taken on the international level? What type of accountability is put in place by the WHO? So, Dr. Umamura, is there anything like that in terms of follow-up, accountability? How does this work once the law is being put in place?
Yes, thank you so much for this excellent question and Facebook. Basically, so the action plan was launched May 2014 and has follow-up periods where all the success indicators for these three main objectives, which are given by the governments, to remove barriers and improve access to health services and programs, also to strengthen and extend rehabilitation, habilitation, assistive technology, assistance and support services, and community-based rehabilitation, and also to strengthen collection of relevant internationally comparable data on disability, are all being monitored. And this government should report back, and there is a very important, let's say, tracking system to make sure that they implement, as Hilda very, very wisely said, one thing is in the paper, but the other is really implemented, not only in the city, but in the rural area. And then I would like to maybe recall all of us when this wise statement made by Dr. Isaac, the dean of the university you mentioned in the beginning of the show, that also it's a matter of everyone participating. Governments is very important, and I can say that there is a commitment, an understanding that for the even Millennium Development Goal and to achieve stability in the development, disability cannot be neglected, to the point they call for an urgent action to improve healthcare, rehabilitation, strengthen data. And there is this commitment to global disability inclusive development agendas. And also what Hilda said is very important. So governments should understand that there are differences. Sometimes in the cities it's more advanced, but in the rural area there is a true lack. So the sensibility of everybody involved should make sure that this plan of action is really in place, in every country, most importantly in the ones that we see that more in need, which are the developing countries. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, I have a question on Facebook here, and I will toss this to you because it's from Susie. She's from Liberia, and she says, I'm a woman living with disability. What type of challenges do women with disability come across? From my experience, for example, men tend to take me for granted. That's her personal experience. I guess the men example is a personal note. But in general, and I know you are an advocate for women with disability, but tell us about the group that you are part of and some of those challenges, specifically gender-related challenges.
Thank you very much, Susie from Liberia. Our group is called the Disabled Women's Forum, Northwest Region in Cameroon. And we are women from rural and urban areas who've come together, each one with their form of disability and with their own challenges. Mm-hmm. I think now education has been a major challenge because in the past, many parents did not see the need to educate their children with disabilities, particularly women with disabilities, their girl children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And some of these women have been so assertive, even without an education, they're able to get out and start a petty business. But for most of the women that we work with, even when they have a will to do that business, at times accessing capital is not easy. Mm-hmm. And so it is still a challenge to be able to raise the capital that they need to run their business or to get the entrepreneurial expertise that they need to run that business. And they keep going. Some of these women are single mothers who have to raise children and educate those children. And for the most part, they want their children to get an education because there is a proverb in our language that says the staff of old age is a child.
Yes.
And so many parents believe that if their child can get a better standing in the society, then they as parents will also be well placed. And so it is still challenging for these women who cannot access capital to be able to educate their children or to take care of those children. And there are some sad instances of women who face abuse, women with disabilities, because they are more vulnerable, who are abused sexually, who are abused physically, and all that. And I'm glad that there had been a culture of silence in Cameroon. You know, like a lot of women who were abused would not be willing to come out because then they will think that as a disabled woman, well, even if they do it, so what? But gradually, with some form of sensitization, women are learning that it is important for them to report these cases of abuse. And I hope that our government, the international community, will take into consideration the challenges that women with disabilities face. Mm-hmm. We say that the girl child is marginalized, but when you are a girl child and a disabled child or a disabled woman, then you're doubly marginalized. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that the international community should make sure that it focuses on the girl and the woman with a disability without, of course, neglecting other components of the society.
And Dr. Mamura, Hilda mentioned the abuse. I mean, she talked about so many important points, but I wanted you to react on disability and abuse in the program that you're heading or in general, WHO, is there a program that addresses disability and abuse for women in particular?
Yes, absolutely, because we know, as Hilda mentioned, that disability unfortunately disproportionately affects women, poor people, and specifically in terms of abuse, and also, as she mentioned, young children who are marginalized. And that's what we call vulnerable populations, mm-hmm. and definitely they are in much, much higher risk. And that's why there is a focus not only on women, but also in children and elderly population.
Okay. Now, you are a medical officer on the disability and rehabilitation team. Can you explain a little more the rehabilitation part of your work?
Yes. So basically, rehabilitation is a set of measures that take into consideration assessment of needs and then tries to provide the best care in a broad sense, not only in the medical part, but also psychologically, which all of these females that we're talking about who are abused, marginalized, requires, mm-hmm. but also the includes also the social part, which is bringing or going back to society, into their communities to provide or to be able to deliver or live in as much as normal as possible. So it's a broad range from the acute phase, let's say when a person is traumatized or has a disease, yeah, manage the health condition, but to make sure that they can be able to go to society or back to their communities in the most attainable health status possible.
Let me go to the very basics. What do we define as disabled, even though we have a sense of what it is? Does it vary across regions, or is there a general definition of who is a person considered disabled? Physically, perhaps it will be easier to identify, but just in general.
Yes. Basically, well, just as a terminology, and it's, I think, very important to define because we have numbers, we have statistics. So the World Health Organization describes or defines disability in a broad term, as an umbrella term for any impairments, activity limitations, and participation restrictions. And connecting this with a specific health condition, but in the context of the individual's environment and personal factors. And it varies tremendously depending on, let's say, because sometimes it's an infectious disease like lymphatic filariasis, trachoma, or, as you said, a mental disability that causes disability. So any condition that could bring into activity limitation and participation restriction with impairments, we classify as disability.
Okay. Now, Hilda, you've been here for several weeks now. Mm-hmm. You're presently, as a YALI fellow, you are presently learning and training with learning the American experience, basically. What have you seen that you would like to, you will hope to see in your country? What have you learned, or perhaps what type of experience have you come across, whether it's within the work that you are doing right now or just the way people interact with you on mm-hmm. the street? What mm-hmm. What is so dear to you that you've come across being in the United States?
I think what has struck me the most is the concept of independent living. In Africa, usually when you're disabled, you're considered as someone who has to stay there. The family takes care of you and all that. But what I have found here is that they empower you to live independently mm-hmm. and to be able to contribute to society. I've mentioned in other forums that I haven't had this much independence since I've been on a wheelchair, because I've never, before coming here, I never had access to a power chair. And I never knew that I could get up and go on my own without someone accompanying me. You know, so that just being able to experience life on a power chair here has been a wow moment for me. And I think about all of the other people with disabilities that I've come across, women and girls, boys and men, some of whom don't have as much as a wheelchair.
Yes.
And how, when you can live independently, it gives you dignity. It makes you more assertive, and it makes you more positive about life. And I think that it is one of the things that will greatly change the picture of disability on the continent of Africa. We still find a lot of people with disabilities who are on the streets begging. We still find a lot of people who live in some hidden places in our communities. But if we can empower each one, you know, we're not saying that as a disabled person you don't need others, but as much as possible, if you can get some independence. And also, I see so many people with disabilities who go around, they're educated, they're doing their work. And so I think that education will be very important. I believe that it is one of the most powerful self-advocacy tools.
Okay.
And it gives you independence.
And Hilda, we'll make this the last words. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today in
You're
the
welcome.
Studio. Dr. Martha Imamura, joining us from the World Health Organization. Thank you so much for your time.
I thank you so much for the opportunity. And Hilda, thank you so much for such insightful contribution.
Great.
Thank you, and
that's our show for today. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.